Blog Talk Radio.
You have a great idea, but you don't know whether you want to start a small business or further a cause. You don't know the ins or the outs about what does it take to file for a 501c3 status with the Internal Revenue Service, or should you just run a small business out of your bedroom? We have experts on today talking about the intersection of the nonprofit community and the for-profit community. When do they collaborate? When are they separate? And when should they really think about the next platform for their particular organization? This is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and we're glad that you're listening today to Focus on Empowerment. Well, hello there. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas. I am on the road today. I'm back in the Greater Boston Convention and Visitors Bureau conference room. We have a board meeting at about 2:30, and this is what I love about Blog Talk Radio. I can take my show anywhere. But I have a great show because I have members of the Greater Boston Convention and Visitors Bureau who are experts in the field of nonprofit and also the for-profit community, and they're going to talk about that intersection. So we're going to have a very enlightening show, and we'd love for those who are listening in the chat room to pitch your questions and let us know what you're thinking. And those of you who are listening online, you can also ask questions, or if you're downloading the show after the fact, we're going to give you contact information for our guests, and then you can contact them directly. I'm really excited. We are 1 week plus out from Christmas. I'm not ready for Christmas, but I will be by the 25th. I wonder if my guests are ready. I hope you are ready for the holiday season, and hopefully you won't go overboard with spending. You know, we have lots of concerns about people overspending. We're living in very tough times. Here in the Massachusetts area, we had a very large chain, the A.J. Wright Organization, that is going to close its doors after the holiday season, and probably over 1,000 to 1,500 people losing their jobs momentarily, just a very sudden decision, according to those who received their pink slip. So it's a tough time for a lot of people. We're hoping that those unemployment extensions will come through. Congress will do the right thing before they go home for the holiday break. So with that in mind, just make sure you stay safe, have a wonderful holiday season, and don't overspend. And we're also going to give you some hints about how you can donate and contribute to worthwhile organizations in your communities. We know how important it is for nonprofit organizations to get their end-of-the-year donations. It's a very important time of year, but it's also important for small businesses, too, so that they can wrap up their sales and their revenue streams before they begin their tax filing process. So we're going to have a wonderful sort of a casual living room conversation today, and we hope that you will participate. We're very excited about the launch of Connections Magazine. We'll tell you more about that a little later on. The advertisers are definitely coming in. I already have some of my pages that are already sold with our advertisers, and so we'll give you more information about that midway. It also involves the membership plan with the Multicultural Symposium Series. So I am excited about what we're doing with NC Thomas & Associates. You can learn more about that at mssconnect.com. That's www.mssconnect.com. Or shoot me an email at tellcarole, T-E-L-L-C-A-R-O-L-E, at mac.com. Or better still, give me a call at 508-947-5755. Well, I am going to talk a little loudly because we're on speakerphone right now, and I am delighted because we have some wonderful guests who are going to tell us more about their businesses, maybe in the short 30-second version, their organizations. And then we're going to talk about what is that intersection between the nonprofit community and the for-profit community. If you live in Massachusetts or if you live in Boston, every two or three blocks there's going to be a nonprofit organization. There are more than 10,000 in this state alone, and it's probably much higher than that. So the nonprofit community is big, It is important, and it is one to really deal with if you are a for-profit organization living anywhere in this New England corridor. But more importantly, small businesses also play such a big role in our country. I did some number crunching a little while ago for a chapter in a book that I am participating in writing, and I was astounded with the number of nonprofit organizations that are in existence here in this country versus large companies. Obviously, there are more small businesses than there are large businesses, so they have a very important role to play in our society. I'm excited because I have the executive director here for Discover Roxbury. Derek Lumpkins is in the house. Hi, Derek.
Hi, how's it going, Carol?
I'm doing fine, doing fine. And also James Pierre, who is the newly appointed program director for Discover Roxbury. What's up, James?
Not much. How are you?
I'm doing fine, doing fine. Just speak up just a little bit for us. And then bringing up the rear with small business. She's been a small business owner for a while, more than 20 years.
Good afternoon, Carol. Hello to your listeners. This is Kelly Chun, and I'll be celebrating my 20th year in business in 2011.
There you go. See, I was close.
It's going to be a very exciting
That's
year.
That's great, Kelly Chun.
Thank you.
Super.
Thank you very much,
Super. Tell us a 30-second version, Kelly, about your business.
We are a consulting business that focuses on multicultural and cause-related marketing, primarily in urban areas, and we work primarily with nonprofit organizations, both small, medium, and large. They might range from the Roxbury Cultural Network, of which Discover Roxbury is part of, to the Mattapan Community Health Center, to the Department of Public Health, to the Mass Department of Transportation. Those are it's a range of
smaller nonprofits to large
nonprofits, and also small businesses. Right now we're doing some work with United Housing Management, which is a property management company based in Dorchester.
Now, you talk about cause-related projects. What's a cause-related project?
Well, the short answer would be the tobacco education campaign, where you're really promoting an idea and you're really trying to promote behavioral change. In our case, it's oftentimes around a health issue. For example, encouraging people to stop smoking, encouraging people to go for cancer screening, encouraging people to come and explore the community of Roxbury and to change the narrative and to see it as a arts and cultural destination.
Okay.
So it's the whole idea of promoting an idea and promoting a behavioral change.
And it can take on, it could grow legs and become very large or very narrowly focused based on the niche that you're working with and your target audience.
Exactly.
Great. Now, Derek, you are the successor to the co-founder of Discover Roxbury.
That's correct.
And what was that process like?
It was very interesting. So, you know, first, of course, there was the interview process, and who, you know, I didn't know for sure that I was going to be appointed as executive director, even though I had been working there for a little while.
Okay.
But once I was hired on by the board, it was just sort of a process of learning some of the old techniques that had been used by the previous executive director, and then sort of determining how to make those mesh and transform and transition into my vision and to grow from that point. And one of the things I'm so grateful for was that I had the ability to hire my own staff. So when I was the only other person on staff, it was just me and the executive director. And now that when I became the ED, I had the chance to hire two new staff people. So the entire staff is new in a way. I guess I consider myself new, at least for my role. So we've been able to form a pretty good team, and we're working together really well in terms of moving the organization forward.
So Discover Roxbury is less than 15 years old. Marcia Buttman was the visionary founder of this. It was an idea, and this is why we're doing the show, that then became a nonprofit organization. She had, you know, lots of ups and downs at the beginning, but now clearly you're stabilized, you've got a strong board, and you've got a staff. So this is like from going from an idea to now the second director and now the staff, which is clearly growth.
Right. Exactly. And we're still, you know, trying to find out that perfect mix of stability and that perfect mix of sustainability. But I feel like we're on that path, and we do have a lot of community support. So it's been a really good, exciting. It's a very great, exciting time right now, actually.
Great. Now tell me, see, I love Discover Roxbury. So tell me, we have friends and guests in the chat room. Thanks so much for joining us. So tell us, what is the purpose of Discover Roxbury? What are the services that you offer?
Okay. Discover Roxbury is a nonprofit organization that promotes the social, cultural, and economic development of the Boston neighborhood of Roxbury. And we do that by providing guided walking, trolley, and bike tours of the arts, culture, and history of the neighborhood. And we also have interactive speaker series that talk about different historical aspects of Roxbury, to talk about different communities that have lived in Roxbury or that have had some type of influence on Roxbury. So the community is 380 years old this year.
380 years old. You hear that, everyone?
Right.
And I have a very wonderful tip that I'll share with you once Derek finishes. That I just, it's in my brain forever about the tour that I took. The first tour I took was Discover Roxbury. But share more with us about your services.
Sure. So the community is 380 years old this year, and it's had its ups and downs, like many communities have. And unfortunately, it's still saddled with some out of date negative stereotypes and some, you know, disinvestment. And so we are really trying to spur interest in the community and really transform, as Kelly said, change the narrative of the community and really transform the way people think about and interact with the community, so that it instills the sense of value, so that people feel a personal connection, and so they will invest in the community, both in terms of economics and also their personal time and investment into the community.
You know, I really look at Discover Roxbury as a paradigm shift where, again, those may have preconceived notions about what the neighborhood is like, but then you get way back in history. Two things just come to mind. With the first tour that I took, this typically is a 2 or 3 or 4 hour tour around the neighborhood on a trolley bus, and then you end up at a wonderful ethnic restaurant that sort of culminates the visit. In fact, we're planning for an excursion with Discover Roxbury when the New England Annual Conference of the African Methodist Episcopal Church comes to my church in April. And on Tuesday of that particular week, we are inviting people to be a part of Discover Roxbury and take a tour on that Tuesday. But two things came to mind. First of all, was if one is by land, two is by sea. What does that mean, Derek?
One is by land, two is by sea. Refers to the Paul Revere ride out of the North End. So when the colonists knew how the British would be coming into or out of Boston, they were going to hang either one or two lamps in the window of the Old North Church. So I believe, I should probably know this, I think it was two. I think they hung two lamps in the window. And Paul Revere rode north out of Charlestown. He actually took a little boat to get from the North End to Charlestown, and then rode from Charlestown north to Lexington and Concord. However, he had a partner who is no longer really thought about in history, William Dawes, who rode south. He rode south out of town through Roxbury, past our office, actually, and then went by land out to Lexington and Concord. So he's forgotten, but we bring him back. We bring him to life every year. We make sure people know that Roxbury was an important part of Revolutionary Boston, Colonial Boston, and still is an important part of modern Boston.
And Richard Dawes was an African.
William Dawes. He may have been. That part I don't know.
Okay, we're not sure about that, but we're definitely sort of making sure that people know that when you look at American history, you are definitely talking about Roxbury and the importance of it as well. James, we're just sort of going back in time, but here we're talking about an emerging nonprofit organization, and you've been brought on board to be the program director. What's your role going to be with the organization?
Well, so far my role has been pretty much to take care of events that were already planned out. I pretty much hit the ground running when I came on, taking care of things as far as our Heart of the Hub, our annual fundraiser.
Right.
And I also took part in the speaker series that were already planned out. We have a series that we did that we brought in, like, for instance, we had Haitian Roxbury, where we brought in a panel to talk about the history of Haitians, the Haitian community in Roxbury,
mm-hmm.
how long they've been there, what why they came, and some of the challenges they faced since they've been there.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
And does their history go back to the time of their founding, when Haiti became an independent country, or do you have a sense of when they began to migrate to the Boston area?
Yeah, it's more recent than that. A large number of Haitians came to Roxbury around the 80s when when Haiti was going through its issues as far as government and whatnot.
I see. So again, you're talking about a nonprofit organization and the cultural impact that they're having on the community. What is it like? What keeps you up at night, Derek Lumpkin? You got big shoes to fill. Marsha did a great job. You know, established a wonderful board. You know, and now you are the one having to do all the fundraising. You've got to put the dollars in.
Right.
You've got to take care of payroll, and you have to answer to a board. What keeps you up at night?
Everything. Everything keeps me up at night. Two things in particular do keep me up. One is just keeping the content fresh. Because, again, we are talking about 380 years of history, and even though we do have a speaker series that revisits some of the cultural contributions of communities, such as the Haitian community or the Jewish community, or last night we had the Somali community as one of our topics. We also have our annual garden tours. But still, you know, you want to keep it fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I've been doing since I've become the executive director is really looking at some of our programs and seeing how we can either retool them or refresh them or reinvigorate them or get new people to participate. Because we have been doing, for example, the garden tours for the past 4 years, and we've had some of the same gardeners for the past 4 years.
Okay.
So I'm trying to bring in some new gardeners who are along the route or nearby to keep it fresh and to keep people coming back and keep everyone interested. But then, as you mentioned, there is also the fundraising aspect, both in terms of a fundraiser, but also in terms of attracting individual donors and also in terms of making sure that we raise earned income. I definitely want to make sure that we are viable and that we are self-sustaining, sustainable, because otherwise it just won't work. We have to make sure we cover all of our expenses and can still be a viable nonprofit in order to benefit the community.
And right now, I would imagine that your organization is less than $1 million. But the thing about this area is that you're competing with countless other very valuable organizations, in some cases for the same dollars.
Right.
What's the challenge, and how do you create your unique selling position or unique selling proposition that distinguishes Discover Roxbury? We're talking again about nonprofits, and this is how they generate income from all of the other very valuable, life-saving, nonprofit. I mean, your arts and culture versus someone who is providing bread for the homeless.
Exactly.
So how do you make the case for Discover Roxbury from those who are truly keeping people off the streets at night?
Exactly. Boston is an incredibly rich nonprofit community. It's incredible how many nonprofits are here, both in terms of arts and culture, whether it's a small nonprofit like us, or if it's in terms of a larger museum like the Museum of Fine Arts or the ICA, which is contemporary arts. There's also all the universities, all the hospitals, and then, as you mentioned, some of the service agencies, such as those that are curing cancer, finding cures for AIDS, feeding the homeless.
It goes
on and on. It's incredible. So we do have a very crowded field to compete with, and it's all a matter of sort of how we approach things. So, you know, we don't have any life-saving work. We don't do that. But at the same time, what we do does feed the soul, and we do attract a lot of people who are looking for something new, something that's really going to feed their soul and feed their minds and really engage them in a different way. So as I mentioned before, partly it's about getting people to connect on a personal level.
Right.
Having them really feel that sense of investment, not just in terms of the dollars, but also in terms of their time and their energy and really feeling as though this is important to them. So, for example, we are beginning to attract more and more young professionals who are looking for things to do other than going to the clubs, other than going to the stores, looking for something that's culturally relevant, something that really means something important to them and that they can eventually bring their families to. If their families come for a visit or if they're raising young children, they can bring your children too as well.
Mm-hmm.
But also we try to partner with other organizations too. So the Museum of Fine Arts recently opened a new wing. The Isabella Stewart Garden Museum will open their wing soon. And the Contemporary Arts.
Big nonprofit.
Huge nonprofit that are less than a mile away from us.
Right. Yes. Real big.
Right. So it's also about partnering with them so that we not only give our constituents exposure to those museums, but those museums also can learn from us as well. Because one of our strengths is that we provide that authentic neighborhood cultural contribution to the city. That a museum, even though it has, you know, an extensive cultural collection, doesn't necessarily have that authenticity that we have because we're
it's different. Yeah,
right.
it's a different scale.
Right.
And this is good to bring in Kelly. And, oh, Kelly, you're, hope you're doing okay. And then you have
I'm getting over a cold. Like I would imagine a lot of your listeners.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is a good place to bring you in because we're talking about differentiation, a very valuable nonprofit organization competing against probably a couple of thousand other nonprofits going for the same pot of money in the case of foundation and other sources. You come in as a small business consultant and in some ways create a media package or a way to differentiate a nonprofit or to help make that nonprofit become more visible. Share with us the services that would bring value to, in this case, a nonprofit organization that is rendering a great service to the community.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned value because I think you start with the value proposition and you start with the message. You know, what is the core message and what kind of value does the nonprofit bring? And as Derek alluded, we are really providing sustenance to the soul, and we're also contributing quality of life. So that is one of the differentiators. And also, one of the other members of the Roxbury Cultural Network, in addition to Discover Roxbury, is Madison Park, more specifically Hibernian Hall, which is also in the heart of Boston's Black community in Roxbury.
And you're housed there. I am housed there.
And part of the message of Hibernian Hall, whose formal name is Hibernian Hall Arts, Culture, and Trade, the Center for Arts, Culture, and Trade, is you're trying to meet art and culture and position them as an economic driver for the community. So when people come in and they take a tour of Discover Roxbury, for example, they might stop to eat at Haley House, which is one of the local cafes. They might stop at Merengue, or they might stop at the Savant Project, which is a restaurant on Mission Hill. So you're also trying to contribute to the economy and the economic development
the
of
local
the community,
economy, yeah.
the local
yeah.
economy
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that is also one of the value propositions and one of the differentiators for what Derek and James are trying to do through Discover Roxbury, and on a broader, more collaborative level, what a consortium like the Roxbury Cultural Network, which is a group of 10 arts and cultural organizations, in addition to some of the restaurants that are based in the community, coming together to push out that message about the arts and cultural value and the culinary value of the culture of Boston's Black community. So that's one of the key messages that starts with that value proposition that I would try to push out as a strategist. Because I think communications really starts with a strategy if you're going to be effective.
We're talking to Kelly Chung, who is the owner of Kelly Chung Associates, a multicultural public relations media and marketing organization, and also Derek Lumpkins, who is the newly appointed executive director for Discover Roxbury, and James Pierre, who is the newly appointed program director for Discover Roxbury. But there's an intersection between all of this, and what I'm hearing is a pretty sophisticated plan of action. You just got talking about a mom and pop. Mom and pop is important, but how can you take your uniqueness and create that value proposition? We have people who are in the chat room right now, and we have folks who are going to be listening. And James, with the work that you're doing as a program director, for people who are listening in Cincinnati or San Francisco or Dallas or Detroit or New York, and they have a unique idea or a wonderful neighborhood that can be developed into a nonprofit like Discover Roxbury, what are some of the program considerations for nonprofits with the work that you're doing?
I'm sorry, what are some of the
nonprofit considerations? What a counterpart, let's say, in Topeka, Kansas, who is working in a smaller nonprofit organization. What should that person consider when they're doing their job in program development? That's a broad question, but it's an important one because in some ways that's how people get funded. Funding sources, they want to see how strong that program is, and is this program valuable and viable enough for my organization to give $1 million or give $500,000. So how important is the program director's role that you're playing in this case with Discover Roxbury, if I have to reframe the question?
Yeah, I would say it would be my job to go to whoever a potential funder would be and just stress the importance of the organization in the work that we do. As Derek had mentioned before, it is food for the soul and it's quality for life, as you have also mentioned, and for neighborhoods like Roxbury, I would say it would be very important and just stress it to them, and we would be able to prove that in for them to come through. Oh, I'm sorry, a way for us to prove that would to have them come through to one of our events and other tours. Like, have you mentioned how you were impressed by what you did see when you were on the tour, to have them come to one of our events or one of our tours and to see the work, and I feel that that would be a good way of showing them the importance of the work.
Do you see yourself going forward having building more relationships with local funders or with local donors, or are you going to look more to the Internet? Because I know the Internet is increasingly playing a very important role in terms of building relationships and getting funding sources elsewhere. Is that something that you're considering in your position?
Depending on what, as far as the Internet, you mean in general? Or
Internet in general, but I guess Internet in cultivating new relationships with potential visitors or donors who may or may not live in this area.
Yeah, definitely. I would say we're all over Facebook and Twitter as well, and we definitely use them as a tool to get the word out as far as what we're doing and to invite potential guests members to our group.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, definitely.
You know, I can see some people who are nostalgic for Roxbury and they no longer live here. They now live in Los Angeles or Washington.
And a lot of them come back every June.
That's right. We're going to talk about Juneteenth also. I mean, they're nostalgic and you know, they want to have a connection. So there's probably an opportunity to figure out how you can find out those pockets of people around the country and outside of the country who want to get connected to Discover Roxbury, and perhaps that's where your Internet platform and your website would take up.
Can I just jump in?
Sure.
So James is relatively new, so some of the things that we've been doing, he hasn't been introduced to, but we do have a very active website,
mm-hmm.
which we're very fortunate to have, very strong analytical, a good way to test the analytics of that website. So we do have a lot of people from New York and California who do check the website often.
Great.
And every so often we do receive emails from people in other states who say, oh, I remember, I just happened to come across your site. I remember growing up in Roxbury. I remember shopping at this place, or when we're going to this restaurant. And they will send us 1, 2, sometimes 3 pages of memories. And, you know, just really telling us all about what it was like back in their day in Roxbury,
mm-hmm.
whether it was
mm-hmm.
in the 80s or the 70s or the 60s or the 50s, it goes back.
Mm-hmm.
People also find old pictures that their grandparents had,
mm-hmm.
and they send them to us, and they ask us to put them on their site. You know, they want to share their memories. They want to get involved. And it's really been beneficial to really update our website, keep it up to date, keep it really changing, and as I said before, keep it fresh,
mm-hmm.
so that people want to keep coming back,
yeah.
want to become a part of what we're trying to do for the community.
And see, I can brainstorm with you right here, certainly with Kelly. I mean, there's so many things, exciting things that can happen, again, with this, not only the intersection of the nonprofit community and for-profit, but also technology. I mean, there are interactive things that can take place, video clips that can go
right on.
I mean, you've got theater that happens here in Boston. You can sort of work with some actors and create some little vignettes that can then go on your website just to entice people about the importance and the cultural dynamics and the value proposition of Discover Roxbury, and that's probably where Kelly Chung would come in too, working from that capacity. So with that in mind, again, we're going to give out your website as well. We're talking to Derek Lumpkin, and also with Discover Roxbury, James Pierre is the newly appointed program director, and also Kelly Chung with Kelly Chung and Associates, and
give us your website. Discover Roxbury is at discoverroxbury.org. And I put it in the chat room also, my friends who are listening on in the chat room. Discoverroxbury.org. And I think I may have spelled, I think I didn't, let me spell this again. I'll spell this once the commercial break takes place. Discover Roxbury, D-I-S-C-O-V-E-R. ROXBURRY.org. So there are two R's in there, and we'll post that again. Kelly, give us your web.
It's KellyChun.com. KellyChunn.com.
Okay, so it's not info. Is it info? Info?
That's my email address. And we changed, we revamped the website,
yeah.
And there were some server technical difficulties, so the portal to my website is KC for info. So thank you for bringing that up.
Okay, yeah. Great, because we sort of put that out there. And I
googled
it. So it will also.
You can get there either way.
All right, ROXBURY.org. We're putting this in the chat room for our friends who are listening online, and I think I have once again spelled Discover Roxbury wrong, but I'll make sure. I left out an R. But it's Discover and then Roxbury.org, so I'll post that again. It's an exciting show, and again, we're talking about small ideas that become big ideas, that become collaborative ideas, that become sophisticated ideas, that become important not just for a particular neighborhood, but can actually become traffic builders and economic engines within a city. We'll be back in just a few minutes talking with our guest, and we want to talk to you now about Connections, that magazine that I'm very excited about that will come out in the coming months. We are looking for advertisers, and we're very excited about those who have already signed up for advertising. So we'll share with you right now what Connections is all about.
Connections Magazine is the magazine for you. We're looking for advertisers like you to be a part of our very first premier issue. Corporations, educational institutions, government agencies, nonprofit organizations, small businesses, entrepreneurs, community advocates, individuals, faith-based organizations, sororities and fraternities, associations, families, and those placing a memorial tribute. Connections is a news and professional development publication targeted at a multicultural audience of professionals, advocates, and emerging leaders who are making a positive impact on a globally diverse world. Our first issue of this specialty magazine will debut in the spring of 2011. The initial print run will be 10,000 to 15,000 copies distributed across Massachusetts, New England, and across the United States. This issue will have a special emphasis on global diversity and inclusion, its people, businesses, institutions, and organizations that impact the marketplace in our globally connected world. Our special holiday pricing provides you with an opportunity to select your advertising space in a cost-effective manner before the prices go up at the end of the month. When you advertise by December 21st, you save lots of dollars on your ad. Plus, you'll receive the free membership in the Multicultural Symposium Series when you advertise in Connections. Pricing just right for your organization, large or small. And individuals can also advertise. To receive a media kit with pricing, please email me at tellcarol@mac.com. That's tellcarole@mac.com. And put Connections Media Kit in the subject line. Please indicate if you're a small business, nonprofit, or an individual. Or you can call me at 508-947-5755 if you have any questions or comments. I'm Carol Copeland Thomas, and I'm excited about Connections Magazine and want you to be a part of our big debut. Show your commitment to multiculturalism, global diversity, and inclusion. Advertise in Connections today.
Well, back to our guests, and I'm sure that they're probably busy doing their Christmas shopping or holiday shopping as well. And maybe some of you have a little change left over to donate to an organization like Discover Roxbury. How important are end-of-the-year contributions to an organization like yours, Derek Lumpkin? contributions are important. They're hugely important, not just at the end of the year, but all year. But we do want to show a strong finish at the end of the year. Individuals overall in the nonprofit sector make up about 75% of all donations given to nonprofits. So, and especially at the time when people are in this season of giving and in this season of wanting to give thanks in some way and give to other people, individual donations at the end of the year are hugely important. I can't stress that enough. So if someone does have a little bit of change at the end of the year, I would love to have them send donations in some way, whether through the mail or online.
Mm-hmm. And Kelly, about you, you're a small business, but end of the year is also important for small businesses, too. Talk to us about your end of the year strategy.
Well, part of it is a tax strategy. So for small businesses, it's important that we touch base with our accountants and our financial advisors to make sure that we have taken full advantage of the tax benefits of the outgoing year and position ourselves to be prepared for the tax challenges and the benefits of the coming year.
Great, great. And in terms of this time of year as a small business, I know I do it. I plan for what's going to take place for 2011. Large organizations started that planning process in the spring of last year, and their budgets are due so that by third quarter of this year, they're pretty much set in terms of what their plans and directions are. From a small business point of view, what does your planning look like at the end of the year? How are you looking at what you've done in 2010 and what your plans are for 2011?
Well, Carol, as you know, and as everyone who's listening knows, we still haven't gotten ourselves out of the recession.
Mm.
So we are in a very crowded and competitive space as a communications consultancy. And the big challenge for us going forward is to continue to grow our business,
mm-hmm.
even though many of the nonprofits that we have serviced are feeling the constraints of the economy. So that continues to be a real challenge. Our strategy in 2010 was to develop more strategic alliances. I have a collaboratively based business, which means that I have a pool of other independent consultants and contractors that I work with, from videographers to writers to graphic designers, photographers, event planners, and so forth. And so one of the things that we did in 2010 was strategically align ourselves with another firm,
mm-hmm.
a larger firm,
okay.
Centerline Worldwide,
mm-hmm.
which is based in downtown Boston, and it's really kind of an outgrowth of a relationship that I had in another life
mm-hmm.
as a TV news and public affairs producer.
Mm-hmm.
I brought diversity and a groundedness in the neighborhoods. Although we've done national and international work, but our strength is really in urban communities,
mm-hmm.
and Dentaline brought a capacity as well as a sensitivity to public affairs and social issues.
Are they a public affairs company, an advertising organization?
They are not an advertising. They're a communications firm.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And they have a broad client base.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought that it was a good complementary partnership, and we worked on a couple of projects in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So the advantage for me was increased capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though I have a collaborative consultancy, partnerships, I think, are critical to business growth and development. So it was a strategic move on my part.
Whether you're a for-profit or a nonprofit, collaboration is the way to go. I know that funders are looking for collaborative partnerships when they are considering funding organizations now. The lone wolf perspective is no longer a great model. So whether you are a one-person company or whether you have 5 to 10 to 15 different partners or staff members, that collaborative piece is really critical when it comes to not only funding but also just getting the job done and also being able to share the resources. That's quite important. I have a number of collaborations that I'm working with, some of them in town, many of them out of town, where I'm now working across the country country with like-minded companies, and so we're bidding on contracts and working on different projects together, looking to working on projects together. Ebony Speakers, I've had them on the air. We've been working together now for about 4 years, and we're going to do a road show and do a book tour next year, so we're taking it to the next level. So that's what it's all about. It's no longer just saying, oh, I'm just here, I'm in this particular zip code. Nope, you can be a global company just by putting the feelers out there and connecting with the right people. That's important.
And also on the nonprofit side, I've made mention of the Roxbury Cultural Network a few times, and that really underscores your point about the power of partnership and collaboration, because you have 10 individual discrete organizations with their own identities, their own mission, which of which there is some alignment around arts and culture, but they saw that that there was strength in numbers. So, and Derek, you can feel free to jump in here anytime, since the Roxbury is a member of the Roxbury Cultural Network. But I think there are some funders out there who could see the power of this kind of a collaboration, where you have organizations that are trying to pool resources in instances where they can and work together when they can. For example, we're conducting a series of marketing workshops for the Roxbury Cultural Network, and that's a way that they can come together, and it's a learning from each other as members of the collaboration.
Right, and a small, discrete organization, as Kelly described, as we just didn't have the capacity or the ability to generate as much impact as we would have liked. Our missions do align, but our resources were extremely limited, and so we needed some way in which we could leverage the collective power of all of our resources and all of our networks to really move all of our work forward, and also move the neighborhood forward, move the community forward in terms of development, socially, economically, politically, in any other way.
A case of collaboration, one that I think can take you from an idea or an experience or a trip to now a whole movement is My Sister's Keeper, which is a grassroots Boston-based NGO, non-governmental organization, that is focused on helping and empowering women and children in Sudan. And the organization now is less than 10-plus years old. They have a very small staff, but the difference that they're making and the collaborative partners that they're working with around the globe is astounding. Right now, the core staff members are in the Sudan conducting and working in the Nuba Mountains with a conference. Reverend Gloria White Hammond is there. And Sarah Rial, who is the program director for My Sister's Keeper, literally last Friday was in Washington, D.C., at the State Department, along with Dr. White Hammond and others, receiving the Eleanor Roosevelt Human Rights Award from Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And it was just a thrilling moment to have her to receive that award and be able to look at it online at the state.gov website. You can go there now and check it out. But again, that's one small NGO, one small non-government organization, nonprofit organization based here in the Boston area, and they are doing life-changing work now 10,000 miles away. So again, the power of an idea is amazing. I've worked with My Sister's Keeper as a small business owner. They've hired me and engaged my services. So the kind of collaboration that can take place is really quite amazing.
Yes, I just wanted to speak to that. One of the members of My Sister's Keeper actually lives down the street from me. Mm-hmm. So I've known her for a couple of years, and just hearing her story and the story she's told, it's incredibly powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to echo what you said.
Lee
Farrow.
Yeah. Right.
It's just amazing to hear what
she's there too. She's in the Nuba Mountains as well.
Okay.
Right. So again, I mean, we're talking about people. You have a mission or a cause related. Mm-hmm. There's something that is burning in your insides, and you then set out with a game plan. You start literally a nonprofit, but you are also looking at it from a business perspective. You got to keep the doors open. You've got to get. You got to have a succession plan. You got to make sure that the bills are paid, the taxes are taken care of, et cetera. So it's not just being cause-related and a community advocate. It's being a business person, too, or aligning yourself accordingly. So what's on the horizon for you, Kelly? What are you going to do differently during this next 20 years?
20 years in.
20 years going to be different?
Well, I enjoy what I do. So I think that I will I'll always be involved with cause-related marketing. I have always tried to live the idea of diversity and inclusiveness from, you know, having lived and worked in the West African country of Nigeria many years ago, to having gone to school at New York University, to being involved with TV news and public affairs in Boston, to being involved with the community of color here in the Boston area, kind of a macro, micro kind of career and life experience. So I expect that that take on life will continue. My big dream moving forward is to write a book.
Oh, great!
Based on
love it.
Some of the adventures that I've had.
Yeah.
Over the years, from helping to bring Mandela to Boston many years ago, to
that was in 1990.
Yes,
1990. Yeah.
From to bringing the Amistad Freedom Vessel to Boston at the turn of the decade, I guess you could say. It's been a very rich experience. So I certainly see that that carrying forward. But I would like to include my experiences and hopefully have people learn from them. And so the next piece is passing the torch.
Mm.
I think, you know, as a baby boomer and as someone who teaches, I also teach and taught at Northeastern, which is how I started my business, and have taught at Emerson and some of the other schools in the area, leaving a legacy.
Right.
And I think many young people, a few of whom are sitting here today, are very much into the idea of social entrepreneurialism, where you're entrepreneurial, but it's in service to a social cause.
Right.
So you're trying to make a difference, and you're trying to do well by making a difference. So I see that, I see those strands, a book, leaving a legacy and passing it on to younger people, and seeing the explosion of social entrepreneurialism being very much a part of the future.
That's a good word to use, because I see myself as a social entrepreneur, and you see yourself the same way. I think you're going to hear more about that going forward, particularly for those of us who have been in business for me almost 24 years, you almost 20 years. And again, you set up something that has value and has content, and now it's time for us to pass that baton in some kind of way. You're doing it very skillfully, because you use interns. Mm-hmm. Tell us how that process works.
Well, here again, it's the notion of partnerships, and in this instance, partnering with schools, which are kind of hard to avoid here in this market. Being in Boston, there's a school around every corner, so you're strategic in the sense that you want to connect with colleges and universities that have a communications focus. So in our case, we've tapped into interns at Emerson, Simmons, Suffolk, Boston College. We're registered online through their internship intake process, where they try to connect students with businesses where the students feel that it would be a good match.
Mm-hmm.
The strategy is to encourage interns to do the internship for credit, although we have been known to offer small stipends.
So what you're saying is that you, as a small business owner, you can collaborate with a local university and bring an intern in, and in some occasions they get credits for the course.
Mm-hmm.
They always get credits for the course.
Well, they don't always.
Oh,
but they can.
They can.
Yeah, they can take it.
And you can do it where there's no income, there's no revenue stream, no expense for you.
Mm-hmm.
That expense is being taken care of elsewhere. And I know other organizations do that, too. I know a nonprofit organization, the International Institute for Justice and Development, that's IIJD.org. I'm on that board. They have a great use of interns. They work with interns around the greater Boston area, again, at no expense to them. but because of the international impact of the work that they're doing, it's a place where students want to come and learn and work with a grassroots organization. So with that said, James, do you expect to include interns in the work you're doing at Discover Roxbury?
Definitely. That's actually one of the things that I was given as a task when I first got on, to grab an intern. So if any of you listeners who are interested, please go to the Discover Roxbury website and send us a message and let us know.
And this is a great time of year to do that, too. I'm putting it in the chat room that Discover Roxbury is looking for interns because a lot of young people now in colleges are looking for that intern experience for the summer. What better time to do it working with Discover Roxbury? We've got two big conventions coming into town in the summer. The Urban League will be in Boston in 2011, and I know there's going to be lots of Discover Roxbury tours taking place, and also Blacks in Government will be here as well. So the convention marketplace will be in rare form, and it's a great opportunity for young people to learn this kind of business, whether it's a nonprofit or working for a small business, and doing it in a way that's going to be very meaningful and relevant.
And we would actually love to have interns at any time of the year, so don't wait till summer to contact us. Send us a message today, tomorrow, this weekend, whenever. We can use interns at any time of the year.
No, and ditto for Kelly. Kind of the and they're not limited to colleges and universities. I mean, we've had students who come to us through local organizations like the National Black College Alliance, and there have been some students who have an interest in communications who've connected with us as well. So it's not really limited to colleges and universities.
Have any of you had any experience working virtually, working with, let's say, I know the collaboration is taking place now. Have you worked with a virtual assistant, someone who's lived elsewhere? Kelly, tell us about that experience.
Well, I think it helps to have a relationship with this person. And when I say relationship, I mean where you had some face-to-face meetings. I mean, the people that I work with virtually, we knew each other, face to face before we started working virtually,
right?
And I think that helps. I think being clear about expectations and outcomes and what the roles and responsibilities are, if you're working with them in a consulting basis as opposed to an employee who may be telecommuting, being clear about how many hours are expected and how they're expected to handle their roles, responsibilities, and their billing. You know, I think all of that has to be laid out
right
before you get into a virtual relationship. Now, I'm sure there are other kinds of virtual assistants, but that's the kind of the way that I like it.
And again, because we're talking about the age of technology, if those of you who are listening in the chat room or online or when you downloaded the show, if you're thinking about starting a nonprofit organization or starting a small business, again, some of your labor doesn't necessarily have to be someone who is sitting across the desk from you or sitting across the table from you. You can actually, they're virtual assistant organizations that you can check into, and you can also go offshore and look at opportunities too. One way to do it is to look at Elance, ELANCE.com. Elance.com has a cadre of professionals around the world that you can work with, and it's amazing the kind of collaborative efforts that can take place. So as we're wrapping up the show, Derek Lumpkins, give us some words of wisdom from the executive director's seat.
Wow. thank you so much for interviewing me this way. Words of wisdom. I would say no matter where you are in this great country of ours, there's always a nonprofit that's looking for some type of assistance, and it doesn't always have to be financial.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they are looking for that virtual assistant,
mm-hmm.
sometimes looking for a volunteer, sometimes looking for an intern. And if you're looking for a way to give back to your community, and you might be short on dollars during the holiday seasons or because of the recession, try giving of your time. I know the nonprofits are definitely a food of it. And again, it's also food for the soul. So if you're not familiar with what they're doing and you're learning about it and you're really immersing yourself into the work of this nonprofit, you'll come out in much better shape than you have when you got in.
And certainly if you are applying for college applications and you are a junior in high school or a freshman or a sophomore in high school, start your volunteering now, because college recruiters and those in the admissions office, yes, they look at your grades, yes, they look at your SAT scores, but they want well-rounded students. And if you have demonstrated a leadership capacity working for a nonprofit or assisting someone in their business, that's going to be looked at favorably along with whatever your GPA happens to be. So you're never too young to start that kind of experience. James Pierre, words of wisdom as the program manager of Discover Roxbury.
I would just piggyback off of what Derek just said as far as getting involved in the community. Earlier in the show, you mentioned if anybody had any extra money laying around for the end of the year to make sure you donate. I would just say that, like Derek said, time is a big deal. If you are in a community that has a nonprofit, such as Discover Roxbury, make it a point to find out what you can about the organization. And for instance, I'll talk about our speaker series. And last night we ended up our speaker series with Somali Roxbury. Attendance was good, but I feel like it could have been better for the number of people that we have in Roxbury. For something like that, it's always good to know exactly what's going on in the community, especially things that not necessarily have to do with you. So the Somali community has been in Roxbury for a good number of years now, and they were sharing information. A lot of it, I had no idea, you know, some of the things that I had no idea they went through. So, again, if you are a Roxbury resident and you hear things that are going on, a good way to support us and your overall community is just by participating. Come in, learn something new, meet somebody new, and to overall make the community a better place.
Yeah, the great words of advice. Thank you so much. And Kelly Chung, wrap it up and give us your words of wisdom as a small business owner of two decades.
Well, I would encourage businesses, both large, medium, and small, to partner with nonprofits who have similar values and whose missions that you feel a need to support. We see this play out in the government sphere with public and private partnerships, but I think it works in the nonprofit sector as well as the for-profit sector. Each entity, the nonprofit and the for-profit, brings something to the table. Mm-hmm. So together, they're I think can be much stronger than they are operating separately.
Great. And that's KellyChung.com, KellyChunn.com. You can go to her website and find out how you can use her services and certainly learn from the master. And Discover Roxbury, which I finally spelled right on the chat room. My chat room friend is just probably laughing from the electronic point of view. It is Discover, and then the word Roxbury, roxbury.org. Find out about all of their upcoming tours and how you can become a part of their organization. I want to thank them for being guests on my program today.
And happy holidays to everyone.
Happy holidays
to every one of you. We'll be back before Christmas next year, next Thursday, next week, better. Giving more information about the holiday season itself. But again, wherever you happen to be, there's an opportunity for you to contribute, to donate, to give, either monetarily or certainly of your time. As our guests have said today, there's definitely a way to learn. There's a way for you to share. There's a way for you to give. And if you certainly are over 45 years old and climbing, there is a responsibility for you to those who are younger than you. Actually, it's called knowledge transfer. I want you to knowledge transfer. I want you to share your wisdom and your knowledge with those who are younger than you. You never know how that seventh grader or that person who is 10 years old is looking up to you. You may be struggling in your organization. They see you striking out on your own. And with that said, you have a responsibility to share and to care and to do the outreach that is going to help that young person to find their own way. Thank you so much. Have a great week. We'll be back next week before Christmas. And empowerment begins when you believe in yourself. Make a great weekend. And this is Carol Copeland Thomas, Focus on Empowerment. We will see you next week.